You just forget the Folio meeting password, even though you've been typing it every day for several years. It's like when you
Yes.
forget your locker combination in high school.
I used to do that all the time. Or I went in my senior year, I walked all the way to my freshman locker like four times and not even realize that I was at my the wrong locker until I got there. I tried to unlock it. I'm like, why is it not unlocking? Wait, I'm in the wrong building. I should be in the building on the other side of the school. So, yeah. My brain doesn't function. It does what it wants to when it wants
That was a funny way of saying sorry for being late.
that's okay. Give everyone, there's still a few people rolling in, so I figured we'd just give everyone a minute or two. First bit is housekeeping anyway, so it also gives me a chance to finish up what I was doing, which is adding photos to an album. I am the keeper of all our family photos. So I got a brand new scanner and I've been scanning negatives between sessions. So I've been doing that. And then I have a self-hosted image server on my computer over there that I'm putting all our family photos on because I have family members that are paranoid about things being in Google Photos.
Yep.
Anyways, and apparently I am selected for loan. I've been getting random phone calls and text messages, mainly phone calls. This is so and so from blah 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 loan processing. You've been pre-selected for $50,000, $60,000. All we need you to do is finish your paperwork. I'm like, sure. Here's my bank account number, my social security number, firstborn, all
Yes, I'd
that
love
stuff.
to have you steal my identity. How can I make that easier for you?
Exactly. It's like if you go to this website, all my stuff is posted on there, including a copy of all my IDs and my deed and my car and everything else. I just put it there
I
for
can
you.
give you access to that. All I'd need is a simple $50,000 deposit.
I think the
That.
scammers for me would just be like, what? Wait, your bank account's negative? I'm like, yeah, why do you think I need this $50,000 loan?
Right.
Yeah, but I know why your bank account's that way
Yeah,
right
you know
now.
why my bank account's negative.
Yeah.
Me and Jason talk about toys outside of work stuff. So
That's
we both
okay.
buy toys outside of work stuff too.
Are they Lego?
No, mine's a 3D printer, so.
Oh,
Yes.
well, that sounds like a lot more
Although
fun.
I will admit that I am very excited for the Star Trek Lego that's coming out next month, so.
Wow.
Yes, that is on our list as well as the Willy Wonka Lego and the I've been slowly packing and we already have 10 boxes of Legos packed up and cataloged. So anyways, we
Naturally.
are, yeah, exactly. That doesn't include the Titanic, which is still sitting out on our shelf on our TV. And it's literally as long as our 70-inch TV. It's like the entire shelf on there. It's cool. So we don't have too much on our agenda for today other than archive space and Dinah, correct? Ah, yes, thank you.
Yes.
Dinah, Liz, and Jason are here to talk to us about that. The first bit we have is a little bit of housekeeping. So, anything anyone would like to correct from the last meeting, any old business that anyone would like to bring up quick, or anything new that you'd like to bring up quick? If not, we can move right on to A space, which is the fun part. Cool. Okay, so let's go ahead and I'll let Dinah kick off. If you would like to go ahead and introduce yourself and jump right on in, if you're okay, that'd be great.
Sounds good. Thank you so much. My name is Dinah Handel. I am a digital library service manager at the Stanford University Libraries. I have a couple of different areas of focus, but one of them for the last few years has been archival discovery. And today I'm here to talk with you all about our new special collections discovery site, archival collections at Stanford, and sort of some of the processes that we went through to build that site as they relate to Folio and sort of passing data between different systems and some of the challenges that we encountered in both like manipulating data in Folio records and then also presenting archival data and like the library catalog and things like that. So let me just share my slides. And I just have to caveat this. I'm not a cataloger. I do not use Folio. I might say something that is wrong technically, and I apologize for that in advance. It's not out of any disrespect for any of the work that people do. It's just not my area of focus. And so there's a lot that I don't know. I'm just going to say that I'm very reliant on people who do know a lot about these things. Okay, so I'm sharing my slides there. All right, you should see that, and I will try to keep the chat open and look at it periodically, and we can take questions at the end. Okay, so I'm talking about integrating Folio, ArcLight, and ArchiveSpace in support of archival collections at Stanford. And thank you so much for having me today. So I'm here to talk about archives and special collections, which are physical and or digital collection of historical records that have an enduring value. I'm also going to be talking about finding aids, which are narrative description of the scope, content, and arrangement of an archival and or special collection. And I'm talking about catalog records. And I'm talking about archival collections at Stanford, which is the Stanford University Library's implementation of ArcLight, which is open source software for displaying finding aids online. And I just like to get definitions out. And so this is kind of the list of all the things I might be mentioning in this talk. So ArchiveSpace, which is the archival collection management system where our archivists create resource records and both describe and also manage the archival special collections that they steward. SearchWorks is the front end of the Stanford University Library's library catalog. ArcLight is open source software that displays EAD, which is encoded archival description. It was developed by Stanford and a bunch of community members. And archival collections at Stanford is our implementation of ArcLight. And our online archive of California is an aggregate site for California archival and special collections repositories. So those are all the things that I might be mentioning alongside Folio today. Incidentally, Online Archive of California switched to using ArcLight as well over the summer. So as I said, you know, finding aid describes the contents and arrangement of an archival collection. At the university libraries, we steward over 5,000 archival and special collections. Typically, an archivist will process, arrange, and describe an archive or special collections, resulting in a document called a finding aid. Researchers then use these finding aids to determine which portions of a collection they'd like to see in person or request digitization from. So they're really important sort of documents for our patrons, our researchers. But they can present a lot of challenges for developing responsive, dynamic, and open source discovery tools. It's worth noting that there are not very many open source archival collection discovery systems that are available to folks. ArchiveSpace, which is the system that we use to manage archival collections, offers the public user interface, but a lot of institutions either use that or sort of develop their own custom instance. And it can be really challenging for a number of reasons to present finding aids and archival description. There's a often complex arrangement of the materials, and you know, fundamentally, archival description describes in the aggregate, so not really describing in a granular way, but grouping things together. In the aggregate, you may sometimes have a folder level description, but a lot of times you're starting with collection and then going down at the most granular to series or subseries. There are potentially digital or digitized material that needs to be integrated into the finding aid and discovery. And it needs to be both described and in some cases seen as well as within the context of the finding aid. And it's really challenging when you think about some of the item level digitization and item level born digital materials and how to integrate those with a finding aid that is describing in the aggregate and not necessarily using a granular level of description that a digital repository might expect for digital content. And then we also want to think about illuminating links between archival collections. So we have a lot of folks in our collections that appear in each other's collections. And so we want to make sure that those links and those connections are visible to our users and our researchers. So because it helps them sort of figure out what they want to look at and what they want to see. The other challenge is that we have multiple different discovery environments for different types of library materials. So this is something that has actually come up recently as a point of confusion for some of our users. What are they looking for and where are they looking for it? So we know that a lot of people start their discovery journey in SearchWorks, but we also know that the purpose of the library catalog is not to present the entirety of a finding aid. It's just not really possible to show the sort of depth of a collection in the sort of library catalog UI. And it would, I think, make searching and faceting and all those kinds of things that we expect to be able to do kind of challenging in that environment. So we do need to sort of link out to a different environment where people can search just finding aids and where we can, you know, leverage certain parts of a finding aid structure for search and display and faceting and all of those things. So the way that we've addressed this so far, and we will continue to do this, is creating catalog records in Folio for archival collections. So they're very much like a stub record that includes some of the same information that you would find in the collections resource record in ArchivesSpace. And just noting here that those two systems don't speak to each other. So somebody is manually going in and creating a resource record in ArchivesSpace and then separately manually going in and creating a record in Folio. And so in that Folio record, which is the catalog record that gets displayed in the library catalog, they link to our finding aid discovery environments. So using the A56 field, they'll put a link to the archival resource key for the collection. So doing this, linking out to archival collections at Stanford is where we landed because we wanted to drive users to archival collections at Stanford. Previously, we had only linked out to our aggregate site, Online Archive of California, and the finding aids there, but we wanted to keep users in our sort of library branded discovery environment. And we wanted to basically replace the links that were in a lot of catalog records that linked out to the Online Archive of California and put in the archival collections at Stanford link. This is so much easier said than done for a variety of reasons that I'm sure you can all imagine. Descriptive practices have changed over the years and are different still across different repositories. So we have 7 different repositories that contribute their collection description to archival collections at Stanford. So we have like different divisions under our special collections department. We also have an archive of recorded sound, an East Asia library, the Coverley Education Library. They each have their own sort of repository designation in the site, so that a user could only look at finding aids from the archive of recorded sound, for example. But each of those units kind of have done description differently over the years, for a variety of reasons. And so, that was one of the challenges that we had to address. The other one is, you know, quite obvious, I've already said it, but information doesn't cross systems. So Archivespace doesn't know about Folio in our sort of environment right now. And there's not a, or there hasn't been rather like an identifier across the two systems that is shared necessarily. There's just sort of these two different like manual workflows of creating entering information in one system and then separately entering similar information into another system. And, you know, we're all human. We make mistakes when we do things like that. Do kind of redundant tasks. And so that was another challenge. And then we were going to be doing this retroactively, right? So we had many archival collections in our library catalog had an 856 field that had a link with an archival resource key that linked out to the Online Archive of California. And we needed to replace all of those with links that linked out to, or rather not replace, append. So we wanted to keep the link to the Online Archive of California because it's important to be in the aggregator system, but we wanted to, you know, very obviously drive users to our own site. And so its location within the 856 field was important. So we were adding the link to our own system in that field. And we didn't want to do this manually, obviously. We wanted to figure out a way to automate it so that we could, you know, do it all at once for thousands of records. So I've mentioned this term a couple times already, but an archival resource key ended up being the solution for us. And that became sort of the new identifier that was shared across both systems. So an archival resource key is an open, mainstream, non-paywall, decentralized, persistent identifier. They identify anything digital, physical, or abstract. There's usually like a stub URL that is shared across all the archival resource keys and then a unique identifier that follows. We call them ARCs. ARCs already existed for the finding aids that were displayed on the Online Archive of California. And the Online Archive of California generated those ARCs. So somebody would add a finding aid to the Online Archive of California system. An ARC would be generated with a URL. That URL would then be added to the catalog record for that collection in the library catalog. And so those steps would be taken. So that's kind of how the information will be passed along. But and then sometimes the ARC would also be added back to the resource record in Archivespace. But there's no sort of like talking amongst all these different systems and passing that information along automatically, right? It's all like somebody has to do that. So what we did was that we generated our own ARCs. So Archivespace has the ability to generate ARCs for all collections, and that's what we did. So it was actually like a, I think it was sort of like one of those weekend or overnight kind of deals where we ran the job on Archivespace and we generated ARCs for all of the collections. So we put in our stub URL, which was the archival collections at Stanford URL, and then an ARC, the identifier was appended to that URL. So now every resource record, every archival collection that we stewarded and had a record of in Archivespace had an ARC that could be put into the Folio record and then would link out to that collections page in archival collections at Stanford. So this is all good. Like now Archivespace knows about ARCs, it has an ARC, and we are able to sort of embed a link to our finding aid and our discovery environment in our library catalog records, which are in Folio. So then we needed to do some mapping. And I just want to shout out my colleague Jeanette, who's head of data and e-resources control. She's wonderful. We met with her and sort of like gave her a lay of the land of what we were trying to do. And she was like, I can do this. And I was like, amazing, because I can't. And she, so we pulled data from Archive Space, and we pulled out the OAC ARC when it was present in the Archive Space resource record. And then we pulled out the Stanford ARC that we had just generated. And we put those in a spreadsheet with some other data as well that would help Jeanette kind of identify collections in Folio. And so then she used Folio and then Mark Edit. She searched Folio for all of the records with OAC in the URL in the 856 field. And I don't know any more details about this, which is probably something you would be interested in. I'm sorry. but she pulled out the data that she needed from Folio, which was fantastic. And then she used the OAC ARC matched to the Stanford ARC in the same kind of spreadsheet that we had created. So she was able to like use the data that we already had to do the mapping, and then added the Stanford ARC specifically to the 856 field in the position that it needed to be in, so that we could have a display very nicely on the records page in the library catalog. So that was like a whole thing. As I mentioned before, there were some known issues that we went into it where around like how things are described and inconsistencies over time and et cetera. So we did have some challenges. It was not seamless, which would surprise no one, I'm sure. We had duplicate OAC ARCs. So there were some cases where the same ARC was assigned to two distinct collections. That was in the case where one was a paper, like a physical paper collection, and then the collection had also been microfilmed at one time, and there was a microfilm record. So in some cases, we had to sort of duplicate, and I think we, for the most part, we kind of left those as is because they are two different things, but the finding name describes both of them to a certain extent, and the catalog record kind of supplements what the finding name doesn't describe, so that was okay. In some cases, we had collections that we would have considered like archival collections, and they have like a resource record in Archive Space, but they don't have a finding aid. We didn't publish a finding aid for them, either because they're too small to generate a finding aid, or a variety of other reasons that I'm not fully aware of. So in some cases, there was just like data missing, but it was expected to be missing. And then there was some weirdness around suppressed items in Folio. And that resulted in some bad display because of the logic that our catalog uses for displaying links and like locations of links. So sometimes archivists suppress items in Folio because that is how they can limit people's ability to request the physical boxes to the reading room, and so they would suppress them, but then if the collection or items were suppressed but there was a link to the finding aid, it would show up in the wrong area because of how the logic of the page display works. So those are some of the issues that we encountered in the process, but in the end Jeanette was able to update 2,721 records with the mapping process, which is awesome. I know I said we steward like over 5,000 archival collections. Not all of those have catalog records in Folio/SearchWorks that needed to be updated. There were about, I don't know, I want to say maybe like 500 or so, but maybe even less than that, collections that had to be addressed and updated manually because they were just too confusing for us to do something like programmatic with. So they just really needed to be looked at and edited and modified by an archivist who kind of was the most up to date on what was going on with them. It's really awesome. We link to the finding aid in most cases, and we're also able to link in our sort of search all catalog application, and it's a really nice way that we try to sort of bring people to our new site. And, you know, even though we participate in this aggregate site, we really wanted there to be sort of like a sole source of truth about our collections, what's available, what we have. And so we really see our own internally developed site as like the most up-to-date resource for folks, simply because we have so much more kind of granular control and can maintain a lot more control over it than the aggregate site, which is, you know, trying to work with many, many institutions across the state of California. So I'll just quickly show what it looks like. So this is our library catalog. We have our nice finding aid link here, you know, telling users that this is where the collection record is going. This is our friend Buckminster Fuller, which is enormous. This is a really big collection. Just to say, this collection like often breaks our system for a variety of reasons because it's so large and complex. So we have like a, you know, fairly like, I want to say basic, but not in a bad mean way. Just like, it's a straightforward collection record here that you would expect to see for the collection. It shows our subjects and our creators. But really where the collection description exists and shines is in the finding aid itself. And so here on Archival Collections at Stanford on our site, we have our collection contents over in the sidebar here. So the collection contents really shows how the collection was arranged. We get into sort of the series and sub-series and like folder level description over here. We have what's called the front matter of the finding aid on the right-hand side here, where you can kind of, you know, get all the info about the collection as a whole. And then when you're ready to sort of browse in the collection, you click on the collection contents that you'd like to see. And then you can, this helps you know like which box and which folder, so that if you are going to be coming in person, you know what to request. And you can actually place your request from this page here. Clicking this takes us into logging into Aon, which is our request and fulfillment system. So this is what we ended up with. It's really nice in a lot of ways. Obviously, like I'm, as a product owner, I'm like highly critical. So I'm like, and it could be better in all these other ways. But we did what we did in the time that we had, and then we will iterate and improve upon it. And under here, you see more options, and you see there's still a link to the Online Archive of California. So we never like we never left that aggregation system because that's really important for our visibility and for our collections to be accessible to a really wide audience who is not starting their discovery journey in our library catalog at our institution, because they may not know what we have. So we still link out to it. It's still there. And, you know, a user could go and use the Online Archive of California, but they could also just use the finding aid here. And then, you know, when you're searching in the catalog down here, we are represented under the search here with some of the other kind of tools that we have that are associated with our collections, either digital or physical. And then if you search in here, I'll search Ruth Asawa, you get, you know, obviously you're searching the library catalog, but if you're looking for more, you also get results here from Archival Collections at Stanford. So we're much more now integrated into the general overall discovery environment for our library collections, as opposed to just sort of like siloing off archival collections into this like third party managed site that we have no control over. And the, to me, the links are much stronger now because we have those ARCs automatically generated in archive space, and therefore nobody has to go back in and add an ARC to a different site. And so the link is much stronger now between these two different systems that we're using for description and discovery. And then I guess this is like where I'll end. It would be really cool if we could do a couple things differently going forward. I would love to pass data between ArchivesSpace and Folio, or at least share data between those two systems. So I think it would be awesome if we could auto-generate like a record in Folio. Perhaps it's just a stub that needs to be filled out more in depth, but there is a lot of repetition between the two systems and what gets entered and assigned. So it would be super cool if we could use Archive Space API and just either pull that into Folio or push it out to Folio. I'm not sure what the precise method would be, but I think that there's a fair bit of info we could just bam, automatically have pushed through. And I think that it would also be really cool if some of the actions that people took would be duplicated across multiple systems. So say that you have a finding aid that you need to either take down completely or you need to suppress a certain portion of the material. It would be really cool if you only had to do that in one system, right? Like you only had to manage the collection contents in either Archive Space or in Folio. And this is something I didn't really mention, but it adds a layer of complexity, which is that our boxes or like the containers that store the archival collection, those are in Folio and they are not in Archive Space. And so that's another kind of challenge that we have. I see the looks on your faces and I hear that. I hear you and it's not my, I hear you. I see your looks and I hear you, but that is how it is. So it would be awesome if like, I mean, obviously it would be awesome if we had container information in Archive Space, like that would be the best, right? But if we don't have that, and if we're not going to get that, then it would be great to sort of have like some kind of interoperability or way for the systems to talk to each other so that when somebody is suppressing containers in Folio, that like that is reflected somehow in the Archive Space resource record. So that's kind of what I'm getting at. And I think that's probably my last slide. Yes. Okay. And that's it. Happy to take questions. Although some of your questions might be why, and I don't have an answer for your why question, but how questions, I can try to answer your how questions.
So I don't have a question, but we do have a Folio A-Space integration, and I'm fairly certain I could just share that code with you if you would like it.
And actually,
I would love that. Yeah.
Sorry. And Dinah, this weirdly is the best segue ever, because I was going to talk about the ways in which that implementation or that integration is very funky and problematic. And the thing that causes the most issues are top containers, because Folio does not understand top containers at all.
Yes. Yes. I think it's one of those situations where we are so deeply into it that we cannot extract ourselves. That's my guess. I'm not in a leadership position, so I don't know, but that's my guess. But yeah, I'd love to see that code. I am also speaking from my position as like a product owner and somebody who has like been seeing sort of this process unfold over a couple of years. I have asked my colleagues if they are interested in this functionality that you described, Jason, of like, you know, sharing the data, and crickets. So I think it could be really helpful and useful, but it hasn't gotten very much traction institutionally. So please share your code and I want to hear more about it. But that's sort of where things stand right now.
Liz?
So just to clarify, Dinah, and if it's not, I'm the technical services archivist who will be talking about Cornell's A-Space stuff in a second, but I wanted to ask, so if your top containers, boxes, archival objects are in Folio, does that mean that your Aeon request system is then only through a Folio Blacklight integration, like request to reading room? And then if that's the case, how are you then arranging your archival objects within the A-Space instance? Like, are you just adding archival objects without top container data at all? Or is it just that you're not using the functionality of sort of like ILS holding IDs within A-Space so that the boxes, top containers, what eventually becomes the items in Folio, like, are they just completely separated? So you're using them as the intellectual organization and not at all as their physical reality? Like, so essentially my question is, are your processors double entering top containers into two systems, one of which is sort of the requestable and one of which is just for intellectual organization of an archival collection?
That is a great question. You asked like five questions.
Sorry, I'm very curious.
No, it's okay. It's totally okay. Some of this I know and some of this I don't know. So I can tell you that management of top containers has been a huge challenge for us institutionally. We have many collections where there are multiple same top containers that we can't differentiate between. So like many of our collections have multiple box ones that are not disambiguated. And the only disambiguation of them is in the ILS system. And that information is not then like returned back to archive space and the container profile. Our Aeon requesting is, it does parse our EAD. So it is parsing the EAD, but it is still also, it has to be, I believe, pulling some sort of catalog data to know which box. But at the same time, I will say that we've had a lot of issues with Aeon not working correctly because Aeon doesn't know how to differentiate between like the multiple box ones, right? And the multiple top containers in a collection. So the Aeon integration, I'm a little bit fuzzy on how that works. It's not owned by me. So I haven't, yes, it's confusing to me. But that is kind of the extent of what I know about the top container challenges that we have. And I, yeah, that's kind of what I know.
Thank you. Any other questions quick before we move on?
Do you know if you're using the Aeon archive space integration that they have written or have you custom worked that?
I'm pretty sure it's like an XSLT custom process, but I'm not 100% okay. Sure. I just don't think that archive space has all of the information that Aeon needs in order to place the request. And so,
yeah, that's why I was asking, because that officially supported integration only pulls data from archive space to submit to
Aeon. In which
Aeon.
Case, we are not using that. Yeah. No.
So on that note, let's move along to Liz. As you said, it was a kind of a good segue to you. And we're also at 11:40, so give Liz and Jason enough time to chat.
I was going to say, and I will let Jason chime in on all of the more technical stuff. As I said, I'm the technical services archivist. So also like Dinah, my work with Folio is very secondary, and it's very much like, oh dear, how do I make this even play a little bit with A-Space? Because frankly, the two systems hate each other and are as strangers. And it is a constant frustrating battle. So as Jason mentioned, unlike what Stanford does, Cornell does have an integration. And just to sort of give you a top level view of, we have three different repositories that are in our A-Space instance. One of which is the Kiel Center, which is where I work. The other is the Rare Manuscript Collection, which is the huge, big, that's where the university archives are. And then finally, our medical college, which is down in New York City, has its own instance, and their instance is complicated by the fact that they do not use Folio as their cataloging system. They use ALMA. So there's a lot of interesting oddness right now. But it sounds like the biggest difference is that we do have a way in which A-Space and Folio talk to each other. And I won't, just being cognizant of the time, I won't get super into details. And Jason, you can, if people are interested in the underlying code or how that really works. But broadly speaking, from my perspective as an archivist, when I create a resource record in A-Space, which is the thing that creates the finding aid that Dinah was showing, we have an integration that fires, that essentially takes the very basic data that is put into the resource record and creates a stub record in the catalog in Folio. And so it's generally speaking a one-way street from A-Space to Folio. There are a couple of exceptions, one of which is when the Folio record is created, obviously a bib ID is created. That is shot back to ASpace, I think via the API, Jason, am I right? Or is it via, and so we have a customized field in our ASpace instance that gives it that the bib ID is in there. So it allows that linkage to happen. The problem really arises from the fact that our integration was created in-house for our systems prior to, frankly, there being two, when only RMC was using ASpace, and also when the integration was actually written originally to integrate Voyager with Archive Space. And when we moved to Folio, and Jason, you can talk about this much better than I can, but my understanding is there's a certain amount of like, well, if we tweak this and that, it's basically the same thing and it should work just fine. And that's not entirely the case. And so the other main thing that I will get into with us, and this is sort of why I jumped, I think, on Dyna a little bit about top containers, is the biggest issue with us, for us at least, in terms of this integration, is that the second big time that the integration really fires is after a resource record has been created and a stub record has been created. The process of processing an archival collection means in ASpace, you then attach archival objects to it, which broadly speaking are folders. And then those folders are arranged in boxes. In ASpace parlance, boxes are what are called top containers. And top containers in ASpace are very weird because essentially they serve two distinct functions, one of which is creating the intellectual organization of a collection and saying, these folders are in this box and they are sort of intellectually thought of as a thing. There is also the physical reality of a top container, which is this is a box on a shelf that should be requestable by a patron. And that is the part where the integration can be a little weird. So if I, for example, create a top container in ASpace, the integration file, no, if I created top container in ASpace, I create a top container in ASpace. And as long as there is no location attached to it, nothing happens. When I attach a location and say it's in this location in the stacks, that then prompts the integration to fire, and it creates a holdings and item record in Folio, and then the HRIDs for both the holding and the item records, which have just been created in Folio, are once again shot back into ASpace. Do I have the ability to share my screen? Yes.
Yes, you should be.
And so the big difference in terms of what this, sorry, I need to hide floating controls. And so for something like this collection, which is a pretty large collection, so this is what it looks like in the back end. And you can see here that it's broken down into series. Here are files. Here is a box. Here is the barcode. Here is the folder number. Now, what you'll notice, at least, is when you look at the different data points here on the collection level, there is no such thing as an instance. There is no instance record. I have to go down to the folder level to then get the data about my box. And you can see here that it has this. Now, what you'll notice here, very interestingly, is it says not exported. And that's because this box was created in Folio prior to us putting this data into ASpace. Sorry. Did someone just say something? Oh, sorry, I wanted to make sure I wasn't talking over somebody. And so it's very interesting and sometimes problematic to understand when ASpace and Folio actually understand that something exists versus it doesn't. Now, broadly speaking, when you're creating instances and top containers and collections for archival objects, that's literally part of the process. So our automation allows that to happen automatically, and you can then end up seeing patrons can either see the finding aid in the ASpace PUI, Oh, I thought I had called up the catalog record, or they could find it through our catalog. Problems start to arise. Oh, I do have it. Sorry. I just have this little doohickey in the way. The problems arise when we are dealing with a collection like this, which is a completely born digital collection. And so you can see here in A space, we have an item. However, it's not requestable because this is a digitized video. All of this data, including the file data, is in here, but you can see there isn't a physical location, which then causes problems because our Folio integration looks like this, where we have a instance, but we have no holdings or items because there is no physical object to trigger that integration, which then causes our Folio folks to look at this record and say, well, this is a mistake. Let's go ahead and delete it, which we really don't want to have happen. And because I want to be cognizant of time, the other major issue with this integration is that aSpace is rolling out a tool that will allow for shelf locating, which allows you, when you create a top container, in addition to saying this is box one or box two, you can put in saying this is a record carton, this is a Hollinger. It takes up X amount of space on the shelf. And then aSpace will be able to look at, we will enter in our data for how much our shelf space is available, and it will say, okay, you created a box. Here's a place where you can stick it. The problem is that Folio does not understand what archival boxes are. And so we currently can't attach box profiles to data in aSpace because it essentially makes our integration fall over. Folio gets angry and then essentially overwrites our box data. So much, I was explaining this much less eloquently than Dinah did, but again, our problem is much the same in that these two systems are not designed currently to speak to each other, and our sort of home-baked integration, which is doing a ton of work for us, is also essentially fighting the system to a certain extent. And I am frankly also not even touching with a 10-foot pole right now the sort of unfortunate codicils to this, which are, where does Aeon get its data? How does Aeon get the data about what is requestable versus what isn't? Where do restrictions live? What happens if something has a Folio record but not an aSpace record, or vice versa? And then also, Kaiosoft is a huge issue. We use Kaiosoft to manage our all of our offsite storage needs. And as you can imagine, a huge amount of our archival stuff lives out there. Kaiosoft gets our data from Folio, which is already being inter our, already be already sort of an interpretation of our actual true data, which lives in aSpace. So because of these sort of, and again, it feels very much like the consistent problems with archives, which is everyone is coming up with these sort of like home-baked one-off solutions that the second you sort of stress test them or have to add a new system, the unintended consequences spiral so quickly, and then you have, you know, however many institutions there are in this country using these programs, creating 80 bazillion workarounds, none of which are truly sustainable. And I will cut myself off there, Jason, so Jason can jump in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot to add. Liz, you did a great job of summing up most of the issues that we ran into. Yeah, the integration of the four systems is really a lot. And I think one of the things that we found is that we don't have any one person or one entity group that knows all four systems really, really well. And so one thing that we've encountered in our migration processes is we'll make a change, and then all of a sudden someone at Kaiosoft is like, this isn't working anymore, and we'll have to go track that down. And then we also have Kaiosoft is doing their own development for integrating, Aeon does their own development, basically. So we're also at the hands of other developers. So, our integration is a little fragile. It's better than it used to be. But yeah, it still has some weird issues that pop up. I think a lot of work went into changing it once we had multiple repositories, multiple active repositories, and the PUI implemented. So, what else interesting around that? The architecture for that is set up that it has its own ECS server on Amazon. So it has its own server box that every 5 minutes it checks to see A, if the integration is currently running. If it is, it just lets that process. And if not, it kicks it off. And then just basically uses the Folio API and the ArchivesSpace API to talk back and forth. And yeah, that's most of that is handled by one of our other developers, but I have some knowledge of it. And then I was going to ask you, Tom, if I get the repo to you, if you can hand it out to whoever you think is appropriate or would like to see it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, honestly, we'll probably just post it in the minutes for the meeting, so yeah. Everyone will have it. It'll be indexed by Google.
Okay. I'll take the passwords out then.
Okay. Yeah. No, just leave them in. It's fine.
Okay. And Tara, to quickly answer your question, it's basically what Tom said, is that data doesn't need to be in Folio per se, but the way our integration currently works is that any data attached to a box gets sent to Folio. And when you send Folio a data point saying, this is the name of the box, this is the dimensions of the box, Folio essentially just goes, no. And then this process happens because the integration fails. It essentially decouples the top container in a space from its resource record, and it creates what we call colloquially ghost boxes. Which are going to be a massive cleanup project because it took a long time. This was actually one of the impetus for us to A, use the PUI, and B, rewrite the code, was the discovery that RMC had thousands, if not tens of thousands, of top containers that had been essentially delinked from their, it would essentially be like if a holdings or an item just was randomly like detached from its bib record, to use Folio terminology, I think. And it was finally understood that the addition of this module to track what type of box it was, which is a pretty common thing you do in archives because you have to calculate, you know, extent of collection, was completely borking everything. We realized that one of the advantages of going into the PUI as a delivery system was that at least our top container data, in theory, should have been able to work in that. But again, because both Aeon and more Kayasoft have to get their data through Folio, we couldn't sort of be like, oh, we'll just create bib records for collections and holdings and items will live only in A space. So it's creating this issue. The other issue is, for us at least, that the integration fires when a box is created, but not when a box is deleted, which is a huge issue. So like if I'm reprocessing a collection and all of a sudden need to delete 20 boxes, I A, have to do that in A space, but I also have to make sure that I keep all of the ILS identifiers, go into Folio, delete those. And like, as we all know, the possibility for pretty significant errors, the larger that gets and the more human integration that is, the problem will just get more, it's a problem that's just going to get bigger as time goes on, unless there is a better way for these two systems to sort of speak to each other in a systematic way.
I think. Sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah. There was also a question from Maura: Is with the Digital Born collections, does E Holdings module help in Folio at all, or is it just kind of like, nope, can't go that way?
That is going to be a conversation I will be having with Jen Colt and a couple of other archivists and our new digital archivists over the next couple of months, because we're going to try and figure that out. So I don't know yet.
Yeah. I didn't mean this might be a good segue. I know internally in Cornell, we're going to be meeting to talk about A-Space and that, but this also might be an interesting topic for the Folio community to spin up a working group of possible, like, additions to edge APIs or something else that helps support this sort of work or these external systems. I mean, just one of the things that popped in my head, and I know we only have about 5 minutes left, but the only thing left is PC updates, and PC is not doing anything right now, so we're good. I know that they're talking about adding custom fields to the instance records. So that might be, if that gets implemented, that might be something that helps alleviate some of these issues, because you could set up custom fields to store that box data. So that won't get this kicked back that you're getting now, possibly. But yeah, it's definitely very interesting. Any other questions or comments quick? We have about 4 minutes.
I guess I have a question for Dinah, maybe that, sure. You know, Liz was talking about the Folio record that was created also keeps its identifier in archive space. Did we consider doing that, or is that something that we would like but couldn't quite get there this time, or haven't thought about it?
That's a good question. I think we sort of link out to the record as a whole, but I'm not sure if the specific identifier is stored in archive space. I'd have to look at a collection record to see. I'm not sure how that sort of gets wrapped up with a bow and tied.
I know we also have the Stanford Digital Repository, and that does have the Folio HRID in it. And then the Stanford Digital Repository will either partially create that record in Folio, the marked data, or it adds an 856 to link to the SDR asset, you know, to see in SearchWorks. But yeah, but the ID is in both places, so we might need that.
So this is a question probably for both Stanford and actually Cornell, because I don't know. Are you creating MARC records, or are you just creating instance records? So Stanford is creating MARC records?
I assume so.
Yeah.
Okay. Just, you know, on our side, are we creating just instance?
Don't know.
Okay. Guess is that the initial bib record is marked, because that's the thing we can't touch after it's created, regardless of what we do in the A-Space. And that's the other big issue, is that the A-Space integration only after creation of the bib record will only ever touch holdings or items. It will not, that's not entirely true. The integration is very mysterious to me.
Actually, that makes sense now you say that, because I forgot Blacklight. Blacklight does index everything, but we can only display items that have a MARC record in our Blacklight instance. So the initial record going over has to be MARC, which is then being mapped to an instance record within Folio for display purposes. But that brings in the MARC storage system, SRS. So. Okay. So we're at 2 minutes quick. Any other questions or comments? Or if not, I would like to thank all three of you for coming today. I learned quite a bit. I'd never want to touch archives. I thought you just played with really cool books all day. Like, this is way too technical for me. says the Folio product owner at Cornell.
But you have to be able to find them to play with them. So...
See, I would just go in and start going from room to room to see what was cool. I mean,
I think that honestly, the biggest difference is archivists think in aggregate and librarians think in item, and that's where our systems get very grouchy with each other.
Yeah. I think it's also some of the things are a little bit like also remote storage too. Remote storage it's all about what space you're using, what boxes things are in, how much space you have left. So it is definitely a different way of thinking, a more unique way of thinking too. But thank you again, everybody. I hope you have a good day. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Thanks all.
Thanks, everybody.